From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? Or perhaps we should call it Are You Not Quarantined this week, Rog?
I'm quarantined, yeah. How about you?
No, not yet. Self-quarantining, but I suspect that day is coming. I think, obviously, there's one thing and one thing only on everybody's minds, and even though it does affect the world of sport dramatically, I think the most sensible thing to do, seeing as you are in one of the ground zeros, is to get a detailed update from you as to what's been going on and how things are there in Northern Italy, because obviously if you look at the science and you look at the data, the world is 2 or 3 weeks behind you in most cases. So I think what you can tell us and the light you can throw on the situation, how it's unfolded, is probably going to be actually really useful for a lot of people.
Okay. You know, we had over the last few weeks a kind of like dry run of what you guys are now going to go through. And in fact, we've been through it. You know, at the start, there was some jokes that we had on here as well. Then you get into the phase of it's just the flu. It's just for old folk and it'll be fine. Then you get into the phase of smarter people talking about the main issue, which is the provision of healthcare, you know, and whether the system can deal with it or not, and which then gets into things about flattening the curve and making sure you always stay under the line of the beds. So where Italy is now, we've been about 10 days of basically been in the house and very, very strict social distancing, so much so that if you're on the streets, as I've said before, you better have a good excuse or they'll put you in jail. By the way, the jails are breaking out there because they're all getting the disease. The hospitals in Northern Italy have been magnificent, but they are right at the edge now of their capacity. And we think probably are about 4 or 5 days away from peak. And then the increase of cases should tail off. Remy has given us a whole lot of information about that as well, our friend. And then hopefully by May, we should come out of this. We should come out of this from a health point of view. You guys are going into this. And, you know, you've got countries like Spain, France, who are basically following our model, which is as soon as the penny drops, you get everybody to stay in their house and they don't go anywhere near each other. And then you've had the view of the UK and the US, which has been what I would call reluctantly being dragged to understand what's going on. So that's what I would say to you, Grant. That's where we are. We have got used to being in the house. For Italians, the house is a comfortable place anyway. It's much more so than, you know, Anglo-Saxon countries. The house is still the family, eating together, laughing together. And so I guess we've fallen back into that. And then you've seen how people then get on their balconies and have a kind of uplifting sing-song. So that's where we are. And we will, I think, get through this, hopefully. And in May, we may get through it. I just don't know about the UK and US, and I don't really want to opine because I think it's quite difficult. What do you think?
Yeah, look, first of all, just for people that notice you talking about our friend Remy there, we're talking about Remy Tito, who's putting daily charts updating the spread of the disease throughout Europe and the world on Twitter. You can find him at Remy, G-M-I, R-E-M-I for Remy. GMI at the end. He's doing some tremendous work in daily updates of how the disease is spreading. As far as opining, Rog, I've written about this in my letter. I've spoken about it in interviews. You know, I'm not a virologist, and so I really don't think there's any point in me commenting on the virus other than to say, and we'll get into this with the sports. I think that's where it's perhaps shown itself the most about just how foolish people can be about this stuff. You know, I think the economic side of it I can comment on, but we kind of talked a lot about that last week, and
we got it all right. We said it was going to be
the only thing I can say is it's getting worse.
It
and
is.
Anyone that is seeing stock markets bounce and thinks we're out of the woods is whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah,
this is going to get an awful lot worse before it gets any better, and the economy, the global economy, is going to be in tatters when this thing's finished. But from what I've seen, actually, another resource that people should follow, someone who is in the finance industry, who is a qualified virologist with a PhD in the subject, is a guy called Chris Martinson. I think I mentioned him last week, but you can follow him. He has a website called Peak Prosperity. If you go there, he's doing daily updates on the virus for someone who does have a background in this stuff, and his stuff's been very interesting.
Chris is superb.
Ben Hunt at Epsilon Theory. And again, if I'm repeating myself from last week, I apologize, but at Epsilon Theory on Twitter, Ben's doing some fantastic work. And another guy who's really come to the fore is a guy called Jim Bianco, who's a longtime finance guy. He's also tweeting at Bianco Research, daily updates on this stuff, and just giving some really informed and fact-based opinions, which I think are what everybody needs right now.
Yeah.
But look, having said that, you know, we're here to talk about sport, Roger.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, this is our Goal on Goal show. I really think that the format is going to be slightly different this week, because we're just going to be talking about the same thing.
I have some non-virus stuff.
I've got a couple too, and we'll get to those later on. But for me, the biggest shock this week and the biggest complete example of foolhardiness and irresponsibility, which I was just blinded by the fact that it went ahead, was the Cheltenham Festival. The first I heard that was going ahead was when one of my idiot mates, Dave Russell, if you're listening, you're a scarf wearing fool. It was when I got a picture of him on the train saying that nothing going on here, the train's packed on the way to Cheltenham. And I'm just thinking, you've got to be kidding me, this thing's going ahead. And then, you look at the pictures, hundreds of thousands of people in the grandstands, in March, all wearing far too little clothing because they're out showing off at the racing. I mean, it just blows my mind that would go ahead, Rog.
Listen, there's two things that are kind of like conjoining to create this. First one is what I call good old healthy lad culture. You know, let's have a laugh. We'll get through this. All of that kind of stuff. And as I said, we had this in Italy as well at the start. All the jokes about the Chinese and everything like that. The second one I have to say is just money, Grant.
I understand that.
But this it comes. But let me just say this, and then you can tell me what you think. You know, we've talked a lot about the governance of sport on the last 2 years on this podcast. And this is an example of what happens. You know, sport has got four or five different masters. It's got the fans, it's got the protagonists, the club owners, the governing bodies, the sponsors, the broadcasters, and in occasions like this, the government. To try and get all of them to agree on something in a moment of uncertainty is impossible, Grant. I'm not even going to say it's a hard job. It's just impossible. You literally are bouncing off the walls. So what do? You fall back to the decision of a common denominator and easiest path to follow, which is until we get told we need to go ahead. And then you can find all the excuses around that you want, i.e. it's better than at the ground rather than in the pubs watching the game and all these kind of things. The fact is, it's too much money at stake, too many people having opinions, and you cannot get a consensus, so you just go with the lowest common denominator.
But look, I don't disagree with any of that, Rog. But what really surprised me, and you touched on it there when you talked about how you had this same thing in Italy with the lad culture and stuff at first. And this is my problem. Everywhere has the perfect means by which to look into the future by looking at Italy, right? And the curve is the same in Italy as it's been everywhere else. So we can look at Italy and know that we're 2 weeks behind at best.
Yeah.
And if we take precautions, we can lengthen that, right? And, there's all this talk about flattening the curve, which is really all about now. The fact that people haven't taken the great gift that's been given to them by Italy in terms of giving them a look into the future and acted on it is shameful in the extreme. I mean, you did see this in Italy. You and I spoke about this in the podcast and we were joking about it.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, look, I think this is serious. Yeah. And I remember you saying to me, oh no, it's died down after a couple of days.
Yeah.
And things are getting back to normal. That's not the case. And so to be able to look at what's going on and say, well, you know what, if we don't want to be there, we need to do things differently. And not doing it, whether it's for money or whether it's lack of leadership, which I think is a huge part of it,
of course,
is shameful, and history will not be kind to the people.
No.
You know, we had even someone like Adam Silver, who, you know, you and I both agree has been a good leader of his sport. I don't think he's anywhere close to David Stern, but that's beside the point now. But you know, we had this farcical half-assed effort about, well, maybe we'll play behind closed doors, maybe we'll do this, maybe we'll do that.
Everybody tried that, Grant. That was the easiest,
but they talked
path
about
of least
it,
resistance.
Yeah, and then we had the ridiculous situation of a full arena in Oklahoma before the Thunder and the Jazz play each other. And doctors come rushing onto the court and say the game's been cancelled. Just go home. No reasons given, right? No reasons given. And it turned out that one of the Utah Jazz players, who incidentally a couple of days earlier had been making jokes about the coronavirus in the locker room and touching all the press microphones and stuff, had tested positive. And that's when they decided to cut it. You know, we had Mikel Arteta contracting the coronavirus in the Football League, and then the Premier League decided to close the doors.
They were dragged into all of them.
If you want to be charitable, Rog, you can say that at least as soon as one person got it, they did the right thing and shut things down, realizing how fast it could spread. But realistically, what that means is they were hoping no one would get it and they wouldn't have to close down, which is just absurd.
Well, let's come back to your previous point about the Italian example, because even in sport, it was there. They tried the closed doors, remember? I told you about that, Juventus-Inter.
Yeah, yep.
And then a couple of days later, nah, it's not going to work. Even there, it was a classic thing to learn from. So why are they not learning from Italy? I think, again, it's the classic stereotypes of ignorant people that don't really, not well-travelled. They think the Italians can't organise a piss up in a brewery. They don't follow rules. They're lax. They're all going for a siesta, which, you know, when you look certainly at where this is hitting Italy, the north of Italy, Lombardy is world class in any standards of business, economy, and certainly healthcare. And if here we are right on the edge of collapse, I can't bear to think what's going to happen to an underfunded NHS and in America, no public health service at all. So you're right. The ones that have not looked at Italy and don't learn from it, history will be very, very severe on them.
Well, it's wherever you look, the same problems are showing up. You know, the other appalling job done was the PGA Tour. You know, they've got their flagship event, the Players Championship, going on in Jacksonville, in Sawgrass, and you know, yes, of course, they don't want to shut this thing down, but to be talking about playing behind closed doors when they open the gates on the first day and let, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of fans in. And you know, people say, oh, well, golf, you know, you're out there, you're not really next to each other, you're walking around and there's distance between you. I mean, just take a look at some of the shots of the grandstands around 17 and 18 particularly. Yeah. You know, to let all those fans in there was just ridiculous. And then to say, well, you know, halfway through the first day, we're mulling over whether to play the final 3 days without any fans. And then to say a couple of hours later, rest of the tournament's cancelled, just shows you how, A, appalling the leadership's been, B, how fast-moving this crisis is, and C, I suspect, an enormous amount of pressure brought to bear on them once they made these ridiculous decisions. To Roger, are you coughing?
Small one, it's just, don't worry.
The amount of pressure being brought to bear on these people once they are publicly making such appalling decisions. I mean, it's just a dereliction of leadership, Rog.
Well, listen, I have to say, and I know it sounds maybe a little bit sour grapes and a little bit who knows what, but I think I've said pretty consistently over the last 20 years since I left the sports industry that I didn't find it populated by a whole lot of real quality leaders and businessmen. It's one of these industries like the music business that's got by because it's brackets and inverted commas special. And that's mainly been an excuse for allowing relatively mediocre people to get to the top. I'm sorry I have to say that, but that's been my direct experience.
Hey, listen, as a relatively mediocre person who made it to the top, you're very well positioned to comment.
Absolutely. You know, like, I'm not saying I'm any different, but I mean,
I'm kidding you.
That was my experience. And now let's take that to where they've got themselves now, because I think, you know, we could probably spend 2 hours talking about this. What you said is correct, but let's examine, you know, that famous state, you know, deal with the problem where you are, not where you would like to be, right? So the fact is that we have got a whole lot of sports events and tournaments and leagues that have not finished. And as you know, sport rewards winners and penalizes losers. And that means that a whole industry is not able to do that, which means that prizes aren't awarded, punishments like relegation aren't handed out, and the repercussions also legally are going to be epic, Grant.
Yeah, well, look, we spoke about this, right? I made a joke about this, talking about
Liverpool
finally not winning the Premier League crown after all these years, and the place we went with that was inevitably the legal challenges that will occur should teams either get relegated, not get relegated, not get promoted, whatever it may be. It's going to be amazing to see who is willing to make themselves that guy that wants to sue someone over whatever decision gets made, realistically, given that the extent of this problem, the fact that there is no simple solution to it. I mean, I know it's going to happen, Rog.
But it's going to happen.
But people are going to start challenging whatever decision gets made.
So first of all, do you believe that they're going to call the leagues and now and say here are the winners and here are the losers, or they will go for a timeout?
Well, look, based on what we've observed and based on what we've said at the top of this podcast, they're probably going to stick with the timeout. You know, it's interesting to notice that the Masters made their announcement a few days ago. In very Masters fashion, very dignified, very simple, very clean. Yeah. Just saying they've postponed it. You know, they didn't really talk about that, but they just said they postponed it, and then they've let all the sports writers start trying to guess when they'll try and get it into the calendar and if it'll be played and if it won't be played. But you know, that was a very smart way to do it, right?
But that's
a one-off tournament.
Oh,
exactly
and it hadn't
right.
Started.
No, exactly right. I agree. So I think the natural thing for the leagues to do is to try and say we're going to postpone this, we'll take a timeout. One has to hope that as soon as they realise it's not practical, they just come out and say, look, here's where we are. And you know, again, like in so many of these things, it's about the delivery of the message, right? I think everybody understands that probably they're not going to be able to finish these competitions.
No, fans, they won't, Rog, look,
you don't think so?
No, you can already see up in Scotland with Celtic and Rangers, and you know, you've got all these things about Foynhaven and, you know, winning when you know, all these examples are coming out. Fans will want, if it's against them, like Karen Brady, will want null and void, or they will want an asterisk. They won't allow it to be clean. Let me give you a little bit of the news I've got from making a few calls this morning to my mates around football leagues around just football. I'm only talking about football around Europe. I think the UK are waiting for a government announcement probably Tuesday, where they will be told by Boris to stop, not time out, to stop, and they will call the leagues then. The Premiership will lead. And they will have it the easiest because Liverpool's so far ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone else will say, well, that's the precedent. So we're just following what the major league has done. So although even though we're a lot closer than Liverpool and there could be some debate, we're calling it now. The difficulty is that it's what you call it on, because not everybody's played the same amount of games, you know? And there are some examples people were telling me today of it's up for discussion, whether it's average points or home and away. And it's not even calling it today isn't that easy, apparently, you know? That's what will happen, I think. I think they will close the season. They won't do the timeout. Football calendar is too busy, even if you cancel the Euros, which they say will happen. It's too busy, they say. And the other point in the UK is they're saying that the virus is going to peak in June. So it's not as if you're going to be like Italy, maybe that in May, mid-May, you're coming out of it. The UK is... Yeah. So it's just not going to work. Then there's incidental things like players' contracts. A lot of players come out of contract at the end of May, and you're saying to them, well, let's just come on in for a laugh for the bunts and finish the season. It's not that easy. I believe things like West Ham, I'm not even sure they've got the lease on the stadium past the end of May, you know. So it's not going to be clean either way, but I believe that's the way it'll go down. I believe next week the UK will tell everybody to stop the leagues. The Premiership will call Liverpool the winners. Scottish Premier League will call Celtic the winners. Relegation based on some calculation of average points. A whole lot of arguments, but that will be how it goes, and no Euros.
Well, look, I mean, there's no correct solution to this. That's obviously a solution. And I mean, I guess the arguments are going to come from relegation. I think it'd be hard. I don't think Liverpool will get challenged.
No.
So at least at the very top of the pyramid, a decision is going to stand pretty much unanimous.
And that's what they're hoping will hold as precedent.
Yeah, exactly right. And you hope that once you've got that in stone and people can't argue with it, everything else cascades down from there. I've read suggestions that maybe there won't be any relegation from the Premier League this year. They'll bring two teams up, Leeds and West Brom, and they'll play with an expanded Premier League next year with five getting relegated, which is an interesting way to do it. Very interesting way to do it. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be a shit show. Let's face it. Whatever happens, it's going to be a shit show. But I think the sooner they... To your point, Roger, the sooner they call this and the sooner they just get all this over with, or at least start the getting it all over with as quick as possible, then the easier it's going to be on everybody.
Yeah, and then, you know, you will start getting into all the legal stuff. You know, I heard Wayne Rooney saying it's disgraceful that we've been used as guinea pigs, you know, alluding to the fact that, you know, it should have been called off earlier.
Yeah.
Which is probably right. But, you know, I've always found in football, especially football, you know, what is I call the kind of like non sequiturs. For example, you know, all these players are getting all their huge amounts of money because of the contracts in place, you know, especially the television contracts. And it's the same with fans, you know. They love to see their clubs being able to afford huge players, you know, big name players. But then when you say, well, you know, you have to play on a Sunday at midday, they go berserk. They don't seem to make the linkage between the two. So, you know, Wayne Rooney comes out and says, well, but Wayne, you know, it's a little bit part of the deal. If you're taking the broadcaster's money, you can't just call things off unless you can square it off with them, because, you know, if they make a huge claim for a rebate, you know, the clubs aren't able to get a rebate from you guys. The players are not interested in that kind of like dialogue. So, you know, I think you're seeing, and this is the point I'm trying to make here, I think you're going to see this bring out the worst in everybody in sport, like the Salah tragic death did. You're going to see all that kind of stuff, and it's going to be very, very distasteful, Grant.
Look, I think you're right, Rog. But look, what I want you to talk a little bit about, given your understanding of the way the leagues are run, the finances of the leagues, let's talk a little bit about how big a bombshell this is going to be for the smaller clubs, because obviously this is going to put a lot of them out of business. I mean, we've seen some of the numbers on the amount of revenue that's generated on match days as a percentage of the overall income of some of these clubs. I mean, the numbers are horrific. Talk a little bit about how you see this playing out in terms of clubs going out of business, bankruptcies. Are we going to get a football bailout? How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. You know, I did. I had some conversations with the guy that owns my Italian club client there. You know, Intella, and you know. It's dramatic in terms of the football club itself, but the point is, it's a little bit like, you know, the virus in the stock market. It's the pin that bursts what was already really bad. You know, a lot of smaller clubs are already, you know, run very badly and, you know, burning cash. This could push them over the edge. I did some thinking yesterday for somebody in Scotland, you know, that smaller club, they've maybe got 4 or 5 home games left. If you assume that, you know, half of their attendance is season tickets and half is walk up at the gate, you can do a number. And I got to a number about 30,000 they would lose between now at the end of the season. Seems like small beer, you know, for, when you're paying a football player 300 grand a week. But, you know, for them, that's huge. And, you know, they'll need help. They will need help. All I would like to point you towards is the amount of cash reserves that FIFA has. It's something in the billions, I think, maybe 3-4 billion. If this isn't the moment for a governing body to be a governing body, you know how they always talk about the football family? That was Blatter's favourite phrase. Now's the time, Sepp. Now's the time to start putting that down to the national associations, who then give soft loans or whatever it is to these smaller teams to get them going. Even with that, right, even with that, you know what the bigger problem is? A lot of these smaller clubs, they are really just hobby assets of a rich owner. And, you know, he's or she is prepared to go through a lot of losses because it's their hobby and everything like that. The problem is their underlying business will be hit so badly that it's like anything. You know, when you need to make cuts, what is it you make cuts in? It's in the luxury stuff, isn't it? The football clubs, the luxury stuff, Grant. So I tend to think we will see a cull all over Europe of smaller clubs because I don't think FIFA will step up. And that will bring about what was already happening that we've talked about a lot recently, also with Fausto, which is the great polarization, the brutal polarization, which this will just hasten what needs to happen. I think you'll see a lot fewer clubs going forward, and you know other clubs will break away. And we say in this podcast, the next 5 years will dictate the next 25. It might even be the next 5 months, Grant.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's interesting you talk about that in terms of the clubs and where they're going to get the money from. I mean, it's handy that FIFA probably keep that $4 billion partitioned off in brown envelopes stacked up somewhere, Rog. So it's in small denomination bills. It should be easier to hand out. But, you know, look, your point about, you know, 30 grand loss for a club versus players getting 300 grand a week. This is interesting, and it helps me weave in one of my goals this week. And this was from the NBA, where the New Orleans Pelicans' new star, a guy called Zion Williamson, who was drafted out of Duke University last year. He's a man-child. He's a young guy, 19 years old, I think, maybe 20. Big, strong, incredibly skillful, has a great future in the league. But he's a young guy. He's a rookie. He's on, a low contract considering what he'll ultimately end up getting paid.
Yeah.
But he came out and he's announced that he is going to pay the salaries of all the employees of the Smoothie King Center, which is the arena they play in, after the NBA suspended the season for at least 30 days. This is an extraordinary example of leadership from a young man, right? And he calls it a small way for him to show his support and appreciation. He's making just under $10 million for this season, right? But he's a kid out of college who could easily have spent that $10 million on homes and cars and God
entourage,
knows what. Entourage. And, you know, he's putting people like the owner, the billionaire owner of the team, to shame. you know, it's truly extraordinary. You know, the guy that owns the Pelicans, a guy called Gail Benson, he didn't step up and do that. You know, we've had other owners like Mark Cuban saying that he's going to make sure that people get paid the salaries that are being laid off when the team's on furlough. So we're seeing tremendous examples of leadership. But to see this from a young man like Zion Williamson, I thought was truly remarkable, you know, to be thinking that way at his age with all the stars in his eyes and God knows what going on, Roger. You know, we've talked about this before. He's either an incredibly solid young man or he's getting fantastic advice or a combination of the two. It doesn't really matter because a lot of times being given that kind of advice is the kind of advice that as a young guy you'd ignore anyway.
Yeah.
But it was, to me, it was just an extraordinary story of
nice one.
How to handle this stuff. I was in awe of the guy.
Especially for somebody so young. I think I saw Cristiano, CR7, today saying that his chain of hotels in Portugal, he's turning them over to be converted into virus beds. And you know, paying for other stuff. It was, you know, I'm not a big fan of his. It just doesn't do it for me as a person. But I must admit that's superb. And you know, again, it's great. You know, there's some people that step up in these moments. Sadly, a lot of them are in wards and with masks on in hospitals, and they're the true heroes. But you know, other people Absolutely. That do that are just fantastic, especially for a young man. That's just superb.
Yeah, no, it really is. You know, and I've seen this from other people. I think Paul Pogba was trying to raise 27,000 on Facebook and said that he would match it if he raised it. Which, you know, look, you can say, well, you know, with all the money you're making, 27 grand
peanuts,
is probably what you find
that
loose change down the back of your sofa. But look, it's a start, right? I mean, you can't criticize him for actually doing it because he could have done nothing. And hopefully, you know, the sporting community, particularly the elite sporting community like the Premier League players and NBA players who really are getting paid extraordinary amounts of money, hopefully they will come to the aid of the people who are struggling and be proactive and be vocal in the community and trying to raise money and try and defray the cost of this. Because it is ultimately going to ripple right the way through sports and take a lot of teams out of business. You know, what Fausto was talking about last week, you know, fans investing in their clubs, you know, that I would think would have a tremendous short-term future if clubs go out to their own communities and get people to chip in, you know, as you said, 10 quid here, 20 quid there, you know, you can, as everyone does, you chalk it down to how many cups of coffee it'd buy you, et cetera, et cetera. You know, small amounts will make a huge difference in this case. If a club like the one you were talking about is on the verge of trouble with losing 30 grand, that's something I'm sure the fans could chip in out of their pocket, or the players, more importantly, but that money can be found and one has to hope that the sporting community comes together and does that.
Yeah, I just think, Grant, we are in a moment of total reset now. You know, like I think the industry, and we've been as guilty as anybody in this podcast, have navel gazed for 2 years. What's going to happen? What do we like? What do we not like? Who's going to be a winner? Who's going to be a loser? You know, this is the computer is resetting, and when it boots up again, you don't know what the operating system looks like. I honestly think that's where we are today, Grant.
Well, look, Roger, I agree with you, but I think it's part of a much bigger reset.
Yeah, it is.
It's part of a financial reset, a societal reset.
The 90s are over. The globalization of the 90s is over.
They are. When you see countries closing borders, you see families hunkering down together and spending time with each other in the house. Who knows when the quarantine gets lifted? The one thing I'm pretty sure of is that life is not going to just go back to the way it was.
It will not.
This will change people. It will change the way we interact with our friends and neighbors. It'll change the way we feel about going to big gatherings. It's going to change. And you know, even if there's a relief rally after this goes away, Roger, you know, the next flu season that comes around, you know, next winter, the first whiff you get of a coronavirus outbreak in so-and-so, people will instantly do what they've been told to do this time instinctively. People will self-isolate. People will
I'm not so sure,
go
Grant.
To their homes. You don't think?
I'm not as a fan of the common sense of the vast majority of humanity.
Well, yeah, but Roger, but hang on a second. This is different, though. This is not common sense. This is fear, right? I think fear is the most powerful. You know, we talk in the stock market, we talk about greed and fear being the two driving forces. But of course, the big difference is not everybody gets greedy, right? But everybody is afraid of something. And so when fear takes over, it's a much more widespread, much broader, deeper emotion. Oh, we will, of course.
We'll see. Listen, can I take you on to some of the other own goal stuff that I had, just to kind of like take us away from all of this, which, you know, will pan out over the next months?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm just going to fire some at you. Agnelli and Atalanta, they shouldn't be in the Champions League. How did that strike you?
I guess not surprising at all, but completely nonsensical. How's that to sum it up in a short pithy phrase?
Yeah.
I mean, look, Agnelli, you of course you understand why he's saying that and where that comes from. But of course, it's cobblers, right? It's utter cobblers. I mean,
it depends. It depends what your objective is. Like everything in life, when everybody says, "What should I do?" I always go back to them and say, "What are you trying to achieve?" Because otherwise I can't give you advice, you know. So what are you trying to achieve, Agnelli, Andrea Agnelli? I would like football to be at the top of an entertainment pyramid for the highest level that we can charge a lot of money for, and it will be something like the NFL, but even sexier. Well, in which case you're correct, Andrea. Atalanta has got no place. Grant, what do you want from your sport? You want the ability that the American ice hockey team can go to Russia and blah, blah, blah. You want the ability that the Toronto basketball team can win. You want the romance of the cup. You want the beauty of the artist, not necessarily the... You know, it's two different things, isn't it, Grant? It's two different things. Almost two different languages. Two different languages. And that's what we haven't got our head around.
Well,
which is why
I completely understand when I say where it comes from, what he's saying. That's exactly right. What you're saying is exactly right. But I think this virus thing is going to change the way the mandarins of these sports have to listen to fans, because they're going to have to get them back.
I agree. And that's a good
thing.
They're
going to have to get them back.
That's a good thing.
No, it's unequivocally a good thing. But they will have to put aside their own desires. I mean, it'll only be in the short term, but they are going to have to think, okay, how do we entice the fans back into the stadiums? Because if they are still worried, if we start the league up again, the messaging is going to have to be, it's safe to gather in tens of thousands of people when the inclination is to stay at home. You know, do we see these clubs seeing a massive upsurge in people subscribing to their own, TV platforms that allow their fans to sit in the comfort of their homes and watch all the matches live? That will probably be a big boost to them. And people will, I'm sure, sign up to that in the short term. And over time, maybe get the courage to go back out into the stadiums, etc. There could be some different revenue streams from the virus. I don't know, but one thing I do know is they are going to have to court the fans all over again, Rog.
Yeah. So again, that was happening anyway. We've talked about this so much, but now I think you're absolutely right. It's going to be more dramatic. The kind of like the question about the why of sport. What are we trying to achieve here? And you know, I want to link that a little bit to what I had as my goal. Maybe a bit romantically, but this is your stuff. I'd love to hear you about this. The phrase, "I don't like where the money's coming from." Our guest on the captain's table, Rory McIlroy. How do you feel about that, Grant?
I thought it was exactly the sort of thing you would like to hear from someone like Rory, who is in that kind of position, Rog, who is in a position where he can speak his mind and know that the game is still going to want him. He's not going to get made a pariah. He can use his standing in the game as a platform to speak out and be honest. Above all, that's it, right? It's just honesty. I mean, if he said, "Listen, I'll go wherever the money is," okay, fine. But at least he's been honest about it. But I think what he said was exactly right, and I think it's an interesting twist, because that's precisely the kind of leadership we're talking about. And when that sort of thing comes from one of the two or three highest profile players in the game, it changes things. I mean, if he hadn't said
But the destination of where the money's coming from, i.e., and again, it's not anything racist, because I can put oligarchs and petrodollars in the same bucket here, i.e. what I would call fresh, non-traditional money coming into sport to change the natural order of things. That's what I took out about this. It wasn't necessarily, I don't like Saudi Arabia, so I don't want this. You know, I'd like to think it's more, I guess maybe a flagpole in this moment in sport, where we're saying, you know what, we might prefer to be a wee bit poorer, but still have our traditions. I kind of think that was, I'd like to take that message from it, Grant.
No, I agree with you. That's what I thought too. I didn't think it was particularly, I think it was probably aimed at the Middle East rather than Saudi Arabia. And I mean that in the context of all the oil money that's coming in and buying up football clubs and right around the world, and buying the World Cup and all that stuff. I think that's what he was talking about, is that sort of money, particularly the Qatari World Cup, is changing sport for the worst. But I just think, as you say, it, for someone to not prioritize money over the traditions of the game, and look, it was always going to happen in golf rather than the other ones, because the traditions are so strong. Even though you think that's a negative in the future of the game, I think it's a tremendous positive. But yeah, it still needs flag bearers like Rory McIlroy to stand up and carry on the tradition of, you know, the Bobby Joneses of the world and the Jack Nicklauses of the world, and he did that.
Yeah, I agree. Another one I'd like you to comment on specifically is your English and your what I call a proper fan. We heard after Liverpool got beaten, a couple of people saying things. Klopp talking about Atletico, that's not proper football, he said. And Michael Owen saying, well, of course they deserve to go through, we battered them. Now, I'd like to suggest that that kind of opinion getting quite a lot of applause from what I saw in England is one of the reasons England doesn't win any tournaments, because they don't understand the need sometimes to pragmatically win at sport, as opposed to just playing 90 minutes on the front foot at 7,000 revs. I thought Simeone, as he replied, he said, can you explain? Klopp said, you don't play proper football. How do you play football? He says, I play football to win with all my soul. You know, the people that win World Cups and European Championships, they pace themselves. They know that there's moments when they can push, and there's no other moments they need to defend. They need to bring home the bacon. And I still think English football, for some reason, hasn't got that message yet. What do you think?
I think everybody involved in this is missing the point. I mean, they talked about Atletico parking the bus and playing with all their men behind the ball, et cetera, which, okay, they did. Liverpool had 26 shots on target. So parking the bus didn't stop Liverpool. They got through. They got 26 shots on target. I don't think I've ever seen that many shots on target.
The XG score was overwhelming in favour of Liverpool.
Off the score, right? So off the charts. But it's a pointless argument, because Atletico didn't stop Liverpool. Liverpool tore through them every chance they got. They just didn't score the goal they needed. It's that simple. The goalkeeper had an absolute blinder of a game. The front three were profligate, but I mean it's a totally spurious argument. If they parked the bus and restricted Liverpool to one shot on target, then okay, fine. Okay, they strangled the game. It's boring. It's Mourinho type bus park, whatever. But it's nonsense. Atletico were battered. That doesn't mean you should go through, and it doesn't mean that they played awful football that stopped Liverpool playing. Liverpool played more like Liverpool in that game than they had in the last three or four they played. So, I mean, I didn't see what all the fuss was about. I thought the whole thing was a pointless argument, Roger.
Okay. I still think you're right. Of course, you're right. The XG tells us that you're right. I still think that these attitudes, that you hear really do hold back English football, I have to say, Grant. Defence isn't celebrated the way it should be. Great defenders.
But hang on, how good was their defending? I'm
not necessarily talking about that return leg. By the way, you know, this is the difference of how I look at it. Atletico won home and away. You know, you can. You know, my old man, he's still alive. I remember when he was a golfer and I really wasn't, and I started playing, and I would tell him, I would come back and I say, you know, I nearly broke 100. If I just had blood, he said, son, it's not how, it's how many, you know? And that's the reality. One guy wins, the other schmuck loses. And England, for some reason, I may be wrong on this and maybe it's for another day, but since Puskas at Wembley onwards, they've been making excuses about why they didn't win, rather than say, this is what we need to learn from the others.
Jeez, we're going back to 1953. Well, in fairness, we did win the World Cup after that.
Well, gold line technology, I think, mate. Gold line technology. That's all I've got to say to you.
Spoken like a true Scotsman.
Yeah. Anyway, so I've got one more. Have you watched the Drive to Survive thing then?
I still haven't. It's on my hunker down list.
Right, well, the one that I enjoyed most, which I'd like to talk to you about, is the one about Williams, which I think is one of the later episodes in the second series. And I just reflected on it. The daughter runs it now, but she's not called the principal of the team. She's called the vice principal because her old man, Frank, is still the principal. Basically, you know what Frank is now. You know, he's in that chair. Every chassis is still called an FW. So basically, my point is this. Williams is a basket case. And you saw it in this episode. I really felt sorry for the girl because I think, you know, I could read what was going on there. She desperately wants to be liked by that team. I don't think they've got the respect for her. I don't think they've got the fear, and I know they don't have the fear, and that's why they had the most embarrassing delay about not even getting to, you know, the training sessions and with 2 days delay. And, you know, at one point, Grant, towards the end, you know, it's a Netflix thing and Netflix do it very well. They kept the camera running and she says, are we done? Do you not want to ask me whether I think Williams as a team has got a future? And they said, well, okay then. And I'm just thinking to myself, listen, they don't need to ask you. We can all see if you if you're still there, it's over. And if your old man is still there, it's over. You know, it's the worst of all worlds. You know, she's defending this because she loves her dad and she wants to protect his legacy. He traditionally, and I think I won't be contradicted on this, has never been a particularly nice guy. Very selfish, very egotistic, never listened to anybody, and the relationship with his wife on that first documentary was very obvious. He's not got the love to say one of two things. I'm going to step back. I'll make you principal. Nobody will see me around here. You have a good shot at it, Claire, and see if you can do it. Or he sits down with his daughter and says, do you really want to do this? You know, are you feeling forced to do this? Should we just sell this to somebody? Doesn't do either of these things, you know? And I found that whole episode to be really poignant and quite touching. And she says, are you not going to ask me if the team is going to be around? It was quite profound for me, Grant.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I've been saving stuff up for the inevitable quarantine, and that is at the top of the list, Rog. listen, I've got one more for you. And this was kind of superseded when I saw the Zion Williamson thing, given what we've been talking about. But last week, Charles Barkley, the ex NBA star who was and now NBA commentator, who is just
legend.
So great to watch. He's a legend at the game. He's a legend in the commentary table. He's a funny, funny guy. But he's also, you know, he's also an absolute champion. And say 2 weeks ago, he announced that he was going to basically auction his NBA MVP trophy, which he won in 93, I think, He's got a couple of gold medals from the Olympics, including the one from the Dream Team, the original Dream
First
Team
one.
In 1992. And all kinds of memorabilia from what was an extraordinary Hall of Fame career. And normally, you know, when you read these things, I read the headline about, they said, you know, Charles Barkley selling personal memorabilia. And it just brings to mind, you know, England World Cup footballers selling them to pay bills and, you know, down on their luck sportsmen and bankruptcy from failed ventures and stuff. Not so with Barkley. You know, what he's trying to do is sell them to give the money to the town he grew up in to help build affordable housing for people.
Goodness.
You know, and it came about, he has a relationship with Panini, the sticker company, and he has an autograph deal with them that he signs autographs and stuff. And said he was chatting to these guys and saying that he's got all this stuff sitting at his grandma's house in a cupboard. He says, you know, I don't keep it, to be honest with you. He said, you know, and he basically asked her, how much could I get for my MVP trophy and my two gold medals? You know, and he's got a plaque signed by the entire original Dream Team. And the Panini guy said, look, we can get you a lot of money for that. So he went out and said, well, okay, what sort of money are we talking about here? And it's, you know, it's probably $500,000
wow.
plus. You know, I think his daughter has said she wants to keep the original Dream Team gold. And he said, if she says that, then I can't sell it because I gave it to her when I came back from Barcelona. But, you know, again, just great to see these sports stars giving back and leading from the front and doing things like that.
Fantastic.
And yeah, from what I know about Barkley, it's the kind of stuff you'd expect from him. But still, it's just heartening to see that kind of attitude in such a cynical world today, Roger.
Yeah. I'm going to close with one that will probably set you off again. Did you notice that Alan Green has been canned by the BBC? The commentator.
I did not notice that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, you know, famous commentator, iconic commentator on the radio. He was told, basically, you don't fit our profile anymore. We're looking for people that can get with the bants, you know, the banter. And he's gone. Or, you know, they've taken the big games away from him. And the same with Mark Pugash, who we had on the captain's table.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, mate. Jesus. What are they doing? Well, you know, what are they doing?
Listen, Roger, the one thing we have to say, it's inevitable that these long-time commentators will eventually hang up the mic. I mean, there aren't too many John Motsons.
Yeah, but these guys are in their prime.
That can go on for that long.
They're in their prime.
Well, yeah, that as I say, that's my point. That's the thing that's surprising, is that I don't expect them to go on as long as Motti and Barry Davis, but the fact that they're being culled now is remarkable to me, frankly, because they've obviously got years, if not decades, left in them. I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to go for the bants. I really do, because I just think, though, the fans we've had this conversation before, the fans they're trying to engage with, you can only ever hope to engage with them temporarily, because their attention will be taken somewhere else. And then what are you doing? You're left with someone who only appeals to a demographic that have said, yeah, we've had enough of this. Thanks, we're off.
Yeah, that's always been your
back
point.
With that same stuff. Yeah, I mean, I stick with it. I don't know. Time will tell. But I think it's a great shame that these not just the sports governing bodies, but the broadcasters are taking such a short-term view of this in institutions which are, by their very nature, incredibly long-term vehicles.
Yeah. Well, I think that's us, mate.
I think it is.
To lighten the mood a little bit, I've got a sports joke.
And maybe are you going to stand on your balcony and sing for us?
Yeah, well, I could do that, or I could tell this joke. And I think we should maybe try and make this a regular thing, the best sports jokes or best sports quips, because this isn't new, but I read it again this week. And I just think if this is an off-the-cup remark, it is just world class. It's the incident with, is it Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots?
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
See, you're laughing already. So he obviously was caught in enjoying the pleasures of the massage parlors and wherever he goes, and the extra add-ons at the end, and everybody was criticizing him about that. And this great line he came up with, he says, "You try jerking off with 6 Super Bowl rings." That is just superb. because it's the most embarrassing thing, you know, like you go there and you get a hand job, right? And like to come up with that line, which just takes all the embarrassment away. It's genius, Grant. Because like you can see the image, right? You know, like these are huge, these Super Bowl rings. You're like,
Rog, listen, I've been trying to purge that image from my mind since I read that quip a couple of months ago.
So next time you try and come up with a similar type, like off the cuff type thing to beat that, because
I'll see what I can do. I'm sure there's plenty out there.
All right, mate.
All right, well, look, all that remains, there's a few more things that remain today. First, this week is to remind you all to wash your hands religiously for 20 or 30 seconds. Stay safe, self-isolate, do what you can to both stop the spread of the virus and also to keep yourself safe. Please do share this podcast with your friends. Rate and review us on iTunes. It really does help. And if you're not already following us on Twitter, then please do so. You'll find us at EntertainedR. That's A-R-E, the word. And you'll find me on Twitter at TTMYGH.
And you'll find myself at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Stay safe, folks, and we'll speak to you next week.
Bye-bye.